This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The Diocese of Covington is one of just 10 across the country that have yet to make public their list of priests who have been credibly accused of abusing children. And now that diocese has hired two retired FBI agents to comb through their records, a move that followed months of prodding from an investigative reporting team at WCPO, which just released part of its lengthy examination of how the diocese and the Archdiocese of Cincinnati track and monitor accused priests and how the public is protected. Joining Cincinnati Edition to talk about what was discovered is WCPO I-Team reporter Paula Christian. Welcome back, Paula.
Thank you for having me.
We also have with us attorney at Rittgers and Rittgers, Conrad Kircher. He's represented victims of priest sex abuse. Conrad, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And you can join our conversation today at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. Paula, let's start with the basics of the I-Team's investigation. You worked on this with WCPO reporters Dan Monk and Craig Cheatham. What prompted this review by you and your colleagues?
Well, in August, when Father Jeff Drew was indicted on 9 charges of raping an altar boy from years prior, we started wondering, does this still happen? How does the Archdiocese of Cincinnati currently handle allegations of abuse after that historic conviction? 16 years ago, when the Archdiocese of Cincinnati was the first in the country to be convicted of failing to report sexually abusive priests. That was our question. Is anything different now than it was 16 years ago? And that's kind of where we got started.
Okay, so what was the answer to that question?
I think I would say yes and no. Some things are different. For example, when the first inappropriate allegations against Father Drew surfaced in 2013 and in 2015, the Archdiocese did pass those along to the Butler County prosecutor. That's a big change from how it used to handle these types of things in the 1990s. That's what attorneys who took cases back then told me. So that is different. From what happened after that, the Butler County prosecutor found Father Drew's behavior, while not criminal, definitely inappropriate, and urged the Archdiocese to monitor Father Drew. Well, the Archdiocese has admitted that they allowed him to self-monitor instead of monitoring his behavior themselves. So that part, attorneys and survivors of abuse I've spoken to, they're not very happy with that particular behavior.
Okay, so what does that mean to self-monitor?
Well, it means that no one from the Archdiocese is actively watching what he's doing, that he was self-monitoring to an outside counselor, is my understanding.
Okay. And you noted in your reporting that the Archdiocese of Cincinnati has made public some of this information as it relates to priests who have been what is characterized as credibly accused.
Yes, absolutely. So now the Archdiocese, they do have a list of there's currently 33 priests on the list who have credible allegations of abuse. That also is a change from how the Archdiocese operated 15 years ago. Our report just challenged that there are many names of publicly accused priests, and in several cases, credibly accused priests who are on lists in other parts of the country, in other archdioceses, who are not on the Archdiocese of Cincinnati's website.
We want to note that we did reach out to Father Drew's defense attorneys for comment before this broadcast, and we did not hear back. So the Archdiocese of Cincinnati has taken some steps to publicize some of these names.
Absolutely.
But the Diocese of Covington has not. And you note in the reporting that you had reached out to them over a period of months, weeks, to get some type of comment about why that situation was. They ended up posting an article in their newsletter, The Messenger. And I want to read part of what they said, which they emphasized was not in response to this investigation, by the way, from WCPO. So this is a quote from The Messenger, the official publication of the Diocese of Covington. At the annual priest retreat in early October, Bishop Roger Foys announced that a comprehensive review of all priest files is currently underway. Archbishop Foy's and the Diocesan Review Board, the DRB, initiated the independent review as a way to continue to assure the priests and people that the Diocese of Covington has, as far as humanly possible, addressed the scourge of sexual abuse of minors by its priest. The diocese goes on to write, "The review is part of the diocese's ongoing commitment to creating a safe environment and ensuring that all allegations of child sexual abuse by priest over the last 70 years have been properly identified and reported. For the last year, Bishop Foy's and the DRB have been discussing the desire for an additional independent and exhaustive look at the files." They say in October of this year, quote, "Two former FBI agents with a combined 50 years of investigative experience began the responsibility of reviewing thousands of diocesan records dating back to 1950. It is an independent review." Paula Christian from WCPO's I-Team, what is the significance of Covington's having not posted that list publicly yet?
Well, Covington is one of 10. Now, there are 177 territorial archdioceses and dioceses from the Roman Catholic Church in this country. So if Covington is one of 10 that does not publish a list and has not announced an intention to ever do so, they're in a very, very small minority. So that means that parishioners in Covington, they have no idea if a priest has been credibly accused, what his name is, where he worked, how long he worked there, or what is the status? Has he been dismissed from the church? Is he still in active ministry? They are really in the dark.
Did you have any explanation of what it means to be credibly accused? That's a term that we're hearing a lot as it relates to sexual misconduct involving priests. What does it mean to be credibly accused?
Well, each archdiocese has its own definition. So in Cincinnati, and if I'm remembering it correctly, it is more likely that the allegations are true than not true based on a review and investigation of the facts. That's how they determine what it is. But, you know, it's up to every archdiocese to decide. So it's just one of these dioceses and archdioceses, they almost function as mini states. They make their own rules. They aren't necessarily all tied in with one another. So, for example, some archdioceses like Chicago, they publish extensive lists of priests with credible allegations. And, you know, then we have Covington on the opposite end.
We did reach out to the Diocese of Covington and the Archdiocese of Cincinnati for comment about this reporting. They both referred us to online comments, including that Messenger article in Covington. You can check out WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab for more on that. Conrad Kirchner is an attorney at Rutgers and Rutgers. He has represented victims of priest sex abuse and continues to do so. And Conrad, what do you think of reporting like this? What does it tell you after all of your experience in the legal system involving these types of cases?
Well, first of all, it's extremely important, and I really congratulate Paula and her team. This is probably the most thorough data-supported study that I've seen since 2002 when the crisis was really exposed. It's important for public awareness that the church cannot manage this problem on its own. It's not capable and it's not willing. So when we have series like this from Paula and others, it exposes the problem so that we can all be more publicly aware. You know, there probably are fewer instances of clergy sexual abuse today than there were in the 90s or 80s, but it's not because of anything the church has done. It's because of public awareness. You know, no one today would let their child go out of state with a priest on a field trip. Back in the 70s, 80s, that was common.
So it sounds like you don't think that either the Archdiocese of Cincinnati or the Diocese of Covington have implemented enough policy reform. What do you mean by that exactly?
Oh, they can come up with whatever policies they want. You know, you mentioned the diocese. You read a statement a moment ago about another meeting. There have been meetings. The first meeting on this in 2002 was at the Dallas Conference of the Bishops, and they came up with a policy called the Decree on Child Protection, which has been changed a few times. But if you don't follow it, if you're not capable of following it, it's not any good. You know, one pope after another has summoned cardinals to the Vatican to talk about this problem. But if you just talk about it and you don't enforce the policies, it's no good.
We see these lists now. Why do you think these lists of these credibly accused or accused priests are important?
Well, they're important for a couple reasons. Number one, again, for public awareness, to let the public know that there are these predators or offenders out there who may offend again. You know, sexual offenders don't retire. Second, it's first of all, you know, I'd like to mention that the dioceses which have not been hit with lawsuits extensively are slow in releasing their lists. Okay, Cincinnati has had a list out for a long time. Cleveland has had a list out for a long time. They were both hit with a lot of lawsuits in the 2000s. Columbus escaped a lot of lawsuits, and they just released their list this year. So it's important also for victims, because once victims see their offender on a list, they are validated. And it also gives them some validation when they realize they were not the only victim. Because a lot of these people, as children and as young adults, believe that they were the only one, that somehow they did something wrong to make this holy person do such a terrible thing to them. And they lived with that, and it caused them tremendous problems.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about new reporting by WCPO's I-Team as it relates to the Archdiocese of Cincinnati and the Diocese of Covington. And I'm joined by I-Team reporter Paula Christian and attorney Conrad Kircher, who has represented victims of priest sex abuse. Conrad, we're hearing a lot in this reporting and past reporting about these sex abuse cases that involves penalties handed down by Catholic authorities within the archdiocese or the diocese. Why is it that some of these cases that involve accusations of sex abuse don't make their way to the criminal justice system but are handled internally?
Delay and manipulation of the victims. So delay. When victims as children are sexually assaulted, and they may or may not tell their parents, but there's if they go to the church leads them to believe that this is totally unique. They didn't know anything about the offender in the past. And it leads the victim and the family to believe that, well, this was an aberration, and they don't want the child to have to go through a court process. And so that's part of the delay. The other thing is that there are studies that show that child sex abuse victims are just unable and unwilling to come forward until much later in life. And when they do, the statute of limitations has expired. Statute of limitations is a legal technicality which says that a legal claim must be brought within a certain time. Otherwise, the claims are lost forever.
And Paula, did you find some of this in your reporting as well?
Yes, I wanted to make the point that Conrad has represented dozens upon dozens of abuse victims, and the Archdiocese could have defended these lawsuits on their merits. They could have said, we didn't do this. This priest had nothing to do with this. She's lying. He's lying. That's not what they did. They defer to statute of limitations. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. Between 2003 and 2005, I filed suits on behalf of 90 victims of child sex abuse by priests within the Cincinnati Archdiocese. In every one of those cases, the Cincinnati Archdiocese relied on the legal technicality of the statute of limitations to defeat those victims again. So the victims were defeated twice, once when this happened, and twice when the Cincinnati Archdiocese said, go away, we're invoking our rights.
We want to note that some Ohio lawmakers are exploring the possibility of changing that. I want to read a little bit of the WCPO reporting here. Quote, now some Ohio lawmakers want to extend the civil and criminal statutes of limitations to make it easier for victims of sexual assault to report crimes and sue their abusers. If successful, it could cost the Archdiocese of Cincinnati more than $50 million based on settlements in similarly sized dioceses in states that have already passed new civil statutes of limitation. One Ohio lawmaker is proposing a one-time window to give victims of childhood sexual assault 3 years to revive civil claims that are already too old to pursue under the current law. Conrad, what would that do to the system? What would it do as it relates to some of the folks that have come to you for help before?
Well, first of all, it would catch Ohio up with the rest of the country, because Ohio is way behind in this. 20 states so far this year have enacted statute of limitations reform. But what that does is it gives these victims a legal avenue. It gives them an opportunity to be validated, to prove that what happened to them, and then to understand that it wasn't their fault, that they're, and to hold their perpetrators accountable and those who facilitated it.
We're going to continue our conversation about the WCPOI team's reporting on the Archdiocese of Cincinnati and the Diocese of Covington in just. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. How the Archdiocese of Cincinnati and the Diocese of Covington track and monitor its priests and brothers credibly accused of abuse and how they safeguard the public is the focus of a new WCPO I-Team investigation. And we continue now with WCPO I-Team reporter Paula Christian. Paula, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
An attorney at Rutgers and Rutgers, Conrad Kircher. He represented victims of priest sex abuse and continues to do so. Conrad, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation today. You can email us at talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets. Paula, as you and your colleagues were working on this story, and you worked with Craig Cheatham and Dan Monk from WCPO on this project, what was the most shocking or surprising element that you discovered?
That's really hard to say, because just when we thought we couldn't be surprised, we were surprised again. I would say definitely one of them was the priest that was sentenced to a life of prayer and penance by the Vatican. He was removed from active ministry for admittedly having sexual contact with a 14-year-old back, you know, in the 80s. And we found him working as the music director at a local Episcopal church where he had been for 6 years. Now, he was supposed to be supervised by the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. They've declined to tell us what they were doing to supervise him. The Episcopal church had no idea of his past, and they fired him on the day that we called.
So the Episcopal Church has fired this priest that was sentenced previously by the Catholic diocese to a life of prayer and penance.
The Vatican.
The Vatican came down on him with that. Okay. And he's also, he has some other additional
work. Yes. He's also a bus driver for Butler County Regional Transit Authority. So, and Craig Cheeto, my colleague, he met with the director of the Transit Authority and talked to him about this particular priest. And he said, well, look, he passed a background check. He's not been criminally charged. He's going to stay on as a bus driver.
And Conrad, you've represented children who are adults and have come forward with accusations against these priests. And you hear what Paula just said, that this is a priest who's never been criminally charged. In all the work that you've done on this, is it only the statute of limitations that keeps criminal charges from coming against these folks?
Yes, based on when it's reported. The statute of limitations is, well, it's black and white. Now, it is a choice of a defendant whether to assert it or not in a civil case. In a criminal case, it's up to the prosecutor. But, you know, may I just make the point that Paula's studies are very thorough, and they focus pretty much on the past. But I want to make the point that this is still going on. I was just hired a few weeks ago by an 18-year-old girl who gave birth to a child fathered by a priest in eastern Ohio, and she was impregnated a year after the diocese. This is not Cincinnati. This is an eastern Ohio diocese. A year after the diocese had been warned about this priest and this child.
What can you tell us about that case?
Well, that's probably about it at this point, but the priest is in prison. He's in prison for 12 years, but now this 18-year-old girl is raising this child that, you know, never should have happened.
I also want to point out in the this priest that we're referring to who was working in the Episcopal Church, he was sued by his victim back in the late 80s, I believe. She filed as Jane Doe, and that case settled. And as part of her settlement, she agreed not to press criminal charges against him. And so that was part of the confidential settlement. And then once the Boston Globe series came out in 2002, she filed a second lawsuit against this priest and the archdiocese for breach of contract, saying, you told me that he was not going to be put in a position where he could sexually assault another child. And this priest went on to become a Vatican ambassador across the world in countries like India, Australia, the Vatican itself, Africa. And she said, you did not keep up with your word. And that case was dismissed due to statute of limitations, if I'm correct.
Conrad Kircher is an attorney with Rickers & Rickers and has represented victims of priest sex abuse. Conrad, back when this was all unfolding, and I think a lot of people would cite the Boston Globe's reporting that inspired the film Spotlight as sort of being the origin of this explosion of coverage of what was happening across the world in Catholic diocese. When did you know, as a local attorney, how serious of a problem we had here?
Right away, in early 2002, because the Boston Globe series caused reporters in every major city to go to their local diocese and ask, do we have the same problem here? And that happened here in Cincinnati. And in March 2002, Archbishop Daniel Palarchik had a press conference. And he said, yes, and this is a paraphrase, but it's pretty close to his verbatim language. He said, yes, we have a handful of sexual offenders in active ministry, but I'm not going to tell you who they are or where they are. And that didn't exactly quell the uprising. And over the next few weeks and few months, parishioners at every church were going to their pastor and saying, do we have a sexual offender here in active ministry at our parish? And finally, word started to get out, and that's when clients were coming to me and we were filing lawsuits and we were exposing the offenders through lawsuits.
Paula, as part of the reporting at WCPO on this series, you tracked down a lot of the priests who are on this list.
We did. So we came up with a list of 92 publicly accused priests. And how we came up with that is did they spend time living in the tri-state area? Were they accused either by the Vatican, by prosecutors, or by civil litigation of abuse? Was their abuse publicized by the media? And we sort of combined everything and came up with this list of 92 publicly accused priests. And then we tracked them, where they worked, how long they were there, when they were placed on administrative leave. And, you know, of that list, there's 37 who are still alive and roughly a dozen that are still living in this tri-state area right now.
Did you notice anything about the demeanor of the priest who you were able to contact physically? I know that none of them talked on the record, but you left business cards on some doors. Mm-hmm. You left a lot of voicemails. You sent emails. And it looks like there was at least contact with some of them. What was their reaction to being questioned about these old charges?
Well, I will have to say that my colleague Craig Cheatham did most of the door knocking. Their reaction was not necessarily, it was, I would say, polite non-interest would be how I would describe it. They were pleasant, but they just didn't want to talk about this.
Well, what's different about this? Has there been any pushback that this is just a rehash of old stories, nothing new that we don't know? What do you argue back if you were to hear that?
Well, I mean, we fully expected people to say, what's new here? Well, we discovered a lot of new things. For example, Father Jeff Drew, who's in jail right now awaiting trial on charges of rape, we discovered that a lot of the same places where he worked over the years, including Elder High School, were some of the same churches and schools where other priests who were accused of sexual abuse were also assigned by the archdiocese. So we definitely noticed some patterns that some of these accused priests were being sent to the same locations, whereas other schools and churches weren't getting any of them.
The full series of digital reporting so far is up at WCPO.com,
yes,
along with this searchable list that people can get some information about the individuals who are on the list. I do want to ask you about another priest. Some of these priests are named directly. Obviously, all their names are available, but some of them are expanded upon within the reporting.
Yes.
We have not independently contacted them or their defense attorneys or heard back from them, so we're not going to name them in this broadcast. But I do want to reference generally an example of one of the priests that you profiled more deeply in this series of reporting that the I-team at WCPO did, based on the Diocese of Covington, who had founded what we would characterize as a charitable organization in Northern Kentucky involved in housing, and had faced allegations of sexually abusing two girls back when they were as young as 11 years old in the early 1990s, and had faced some repercussions for that, apparently removed from ministry. But just last year, there was a house built and named for him in his honor in Ellesmere. What do we make of that?
Well, it's interesting because in this particular case, we tried to figure out, you know, is this priest still an active priest? I know that he was suspended by the Diocese of Covington back in the 1990s. We don't know if he's still in active ministry, if he has been laicized, meaning dismissed from the clergy, or just removed, sentenced to a life of prayer and penance. And that's because the Diocese of Covington doesn't publish a list, so we don't know. So he founded a nonprofit for building low-income housing in Northern Kentucky, and he was honored and celebrated at a celebration last year for his good works, which, I mean, I don't think anyone would argue these are not good deeds that he's done, but there's no mention of his past abuse. And he's there with an active priest taking pictures. And, you know, it left a bad taste in the mouth of some attorneys and abuse survivors.
The Diocese of Covington reached a settlement with sex abuse accusers that was valued at $90.5 million. That was settled in 2009. And the lead attorney on that case was quoted in your reporting, Paul. His name is Robert Steinberg. And he said, quote, "I would be shocked if the diocese was promoting this priest as a reputable person." Did you get any reaction from the other individuals or that organization that he founded about why a celebration for someone who faced these serious accusations?
Well, again, I go back to people don't know, because there is no list in the Diocese of Covington. So unless you've been around and you remember this back in 1994, how would you know? I mean, how would you know? So that's all I can say.
Conrad Kircher is an attorney with Rittgers & Rittgers. Is it typical for a church to have celebrations like this for priests who have faced these serious accusations? Is there this idea that if enough time passes, not just from the legal standpoint of statute of limitations, but sort of the, I don't know, forgetful nature of the public?
Well, I haven't seen a lot of that on the Ohio side. What I have seen is situations where this iconic priest, their elder of elder's principal, was one of the primary offenders. And he was an icon, and it wasn't until, you know, years after he had retired that the allegations came forward. And so then, if there are buildings named after the priest, often those names are taken down. So that's more of what I've seen.
And Paula, what is next in this series? We know that there is a multimedia component to this. The digital stories are online at WCPO.com now, but you've got some plans for broadcast as well.
Yes. Yeah, so every night at 11 o'clock from Monday through Thursday, we'll have a different story. Tonight, we focus on our list. We focus on the priest who was working at the Episcopal Church. Tomorrow night, there's a story of a former Purcell teacher who tells the story of how he reported abuse back in 1978, and about an assistant principal and Marianne's brother who was sexually assaulting students and how what happened in that case. On Wednesday, we focus on the statute of limitations and the push to change it in Ohio. We also focus on how the Archdiocese of Cincinnati of victims received one of the smallest payouts in the country back in the early 2000s with that settlement versus a lot of other victims in other archdioceses were paid a lot more. And then on Thursday, we track the 12 former and current priests who are living locally and what they're doing. And we, some of them are doing some very interesting and unusual and troubling things.
Our thanks to WCPO I-Team reporter Paula Christian and Rutgers and Rutgers attorney Conrad Kircher for joining us. Appreciate both of you being here.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.